Hey everyone, this is Ksenia Montan and welcome to another episode of People of Marketing podcast. I'm the founder and CEO of Planable, the collaboration tool for social media teams, and I launched this podcast to take a sneak peek into the lives of marketers that inspire me. Every week, we explore the story of their careers, the choices, mistakes, wins, and imperfections of their work life. Today, we're joined by Michael Knox. He's the head of creative at Roller, News Corp's in-house creative agency. He's the former chief creative officer of Gray Hong Kong and member of Gray's global creative board. He's judged and won at major award shows, including DNAD, Cannes Lions, and Spikes Asia. Michael, I'm so excited to talk to you today, to catch up with you, and thanks for joining me on People of Marketing podcast.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so the way I really love to start these conversations is by kind of looking backwards at your career and trying to connect the dots. What would you say was your first contact, your first interaction with marketing, and what do you think, you know, got you into marketing now when you look back at your career and at your early start?
The part of marketing that I'm involved in is creative. I've always really worked for advertising agencies, has been my connection to it. And the way I got into an agency first off was doing work experience. I did a week's work experience because I thought it was something that I'd like to do, and it's something that I've always been interested in. My sister was working at an agency in Sydney, Clemenger, and from doing work experience, I found myself with a job in dispatch, which is what you had when you didn't have email. I would deliver the mail. If it was someone's birthday, I would deliver 120 pieces of A4 paper that would say there'd be birthday cake on the third floor. If the CEO's car needed petrol, I would do that. If couriers dropped off parcels, I would deliver those parcels to whoever they were for. So it gave me a really good insight. I think someone told me at the time, it's like a who's who in the zoo. You get to learn who everyone is and what everyone does. And it was a really good place for me to start to actually see how an agency works. Always wanting to get into creative eventually, but knowing that it wasn't just a matter of, there weren't really ever jobs advertised in those departments. You sort of had to be in the right place at the right time. So that was my introduction to it. And from there, from the mailroom, I became an editor. I edited video, learned off some really great guys, some guys who became good friends of mine, how to cut video, make TV ads, and that gave me a really good helpful, useful insight into, I guess, how to tell stories through pictures, which was a great way to learn. And I also learned at the same time how the business worked, just by observing it, you know, by filling up the coffee in boardrooms was a good way to actually see the tension before a new business pitch. And you kind of got to understand what it took and what was actually going on before having to really play a role in that. So that was how I got in. That was my start.
That's a great start, you know, getting, you know, soaked in into this industry, kind of, but from the sidelines a bit, you know, observing it, getting familiar with it, and then diving deeper once you get to that point. I think that's an amazing start. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned that you knew that you wanted to get into that world, but it was hard and you had to be at the right place. But how did you know that you wanted to do that? Like, what was the insight for you when you were very young that, you know, creative is what you wanted to, you know, do in your life?
Yeah, I think I always liked the idea of being a writer, or I liked the idea of writing, but I never really had the attention span or concentration ability to write for a long time. I studied journalism. I think the fact that journalism is about the telling of story of based on facts, I think I preferred to make it up. I preferred to have an imagination involved in it. And I found advertising to be a good way to kind of construct an argument, yet at the same time use language that was more based on storytelling. And I'd always found that quite interesting. And I'd found the environments, those creative environments, those places, generally speaking, to be fun. You know, I think that it wasn't really ever like going to work when you were having fun doing it. And the people in those places, in those agencies and those businesses were really enjoying themselves. And I found that attractive. I thought this, you know, this could be for me.
Yeah. And you've spent your majority, your entire career actually in the agency world, right? Did you have any tries at the client world that's not on your LinkedIn profile?
Well, no, I didn't. I think at the moment I am on the client side of the business, and the client just happens to be a media provider.
So like you transitioned, you transitioned recently to Roller, internal creative agency of News Corp. So it's kind of a bit of a change in, you know, compared to everything that you've done so far, right? You're still in an agency, you're still heading creative, running creative, but it's, you're closer to the client, right? What do you think about and how do you feel about internal agencies and you know, this change in your work life?
Yeah, I think that the similarity that you need, or the similarity that I need in order to make that transition a successful one, is really about the people and about the culture that exists. To go from an agency, which I have, which was very determined and focused on creativity and focused on ideas, needing to build a similar culture or go into a culture which is of the same type of strength is quite important. I think one of the things that I've noticed is that the people that I spend my time with now are 100% focused on one particular stream of business, where in agencies, you have the benefit of going from, you know, in one room you'll be selling, I don't know, let's just say a supermarket brand, and in the next meeting you'll go to and you'll be talking about a prestige car, and then you'll go to another meeting in that same day and you might be talking about selling a hotel. So you have this very kind of fluid, if you like, understanding and a really broad perspective, as opposed to when you are 100% focused on a particular product and a particular brand and a particular set of consumers. And I think I find that the biggest difference, that you spend a lot of time with people who have a very deep, rich understanding of what they are doing and what they are selling. And I think the beauty in that brings a whole lot of insight that you actually gather. And in an agency, what you actually have is you have people who tend to have very broad knowledge based on a whole number of insights into a whole number of products. And that too is a energized environment. They're both quite similar. One might be a little bit more focused and the other one might be a little bit more open, would kind of be my way of seeing the differences at this point. As long as both of them are, you know, looking for the same thing, I don't think it matters which you know building you're in.
True. So you mentioned that the agency is very new, right? So it's fresh, you're still building it. So what's, you know, what's happening right now? Give us a bit of context of what's happening and what your role looks like there, what your role is going to look like, and what, you know, your day-to-day job is right now while you're still developing it.
Well, I think that, you know, at the time that we're having this conversation, with what's going on in the world, playing out in so many different countries in similar type of ways, the thirst for news, or the desire to keep connected by what is going on, you know, hour by hour. I think that, you know, if we were having this conversation a few months ago, we'd be talking about the news cycle being 24 hours, and now we're kind of in a place where the news cycle is a lot shorter than that. So the role that I have, or the team that we have, in operation is to continue to find ways to keep people connected, to keep people safe, to keep people up to date, to keep people informed, and to advertise those channels where they can do that, and to find ways to allow different customers to experience the products. So we have a team that's very focused on a flexibility of finding new ways to talk about our product, and also at the same time fast enough to be consistent enough to keep up with the news cycle, to work together. And now that we're all working from home and we're all doing this from different locations, creating a team that's very open with its conversations about how we're going, and connected through various technologies, so that you don't have to just be, because you can't physically check in, but creating a team that's comfortable enough to talk about how they're going and what it's like to work in these times, and to try to keep the communication very open.
Yeah. So in the beginning, you mentioned that you were developing the team for Roller. So I imagine that meant, recruiting. Have you continued doing that, and how do you manage it during this entire situation?
We have completed the recruitment stage, and we have all the people in place, and only just because a few of those team members joined when we were working from home. So I think we have three or possibly three on the team now who haven't done a day in the office. So their first day was, as part of this remote working experience, and that's the hard way to start. And this is quite a surreal, time to start. That's been the recruitment phase was a very enjoyable experience. A lot of good, interesting talent available and interested in the positions that we filled.
Yeah. So one question that I have about working from home as a creative, my assumption, my suspicion is that it's particularly tough for creatives to work from home. You need more space, you need more mental space as well. Is work from home particularly tough for creatives, and why is that so? And how are you trying to make it work so that, you're not stuck and you can get inspiration from inside the walls of your home?
Yeah, I think I'm sure that you'd experience it too, or, you'd be aware that there's an efficiency that comes with working from home that can come and go. Like, I think that you can find as a creative that without the interruptions that can happen in a workplace, you can get things done quicker. I think what you miss is the ability to walk away and have that conversation which makes you come back and change your mind. I think the interactions that you have are a different set of interactions. I think that, if you go through the phases of building yourself up to a presentation to present an idea, which might take a little bit of a rehearsal before you jump on a in front of a table and present to people, you don't have that anymore. You kind of go from the same thing you're typing on to being the same thing you're presenting from. So I think that over time people will develop their own rituals. But I think just going back to the beginning of that, I think that without the interruptions, we're able to be quicker. I think there's a speed that comes. And that's not necessarily always good, but I think that we're able to respond quite quickly. And I think that the industry and the business that we're all in is looking for faster responses anyway. So I think there's some benefits to it. I think technology, like these smaller kind of group conversations that happen via video, I think some of those are quite useful, to the process in the interaction phase. And I don't think they're detrimental at all to the creative process. I think they would be helpful. But I think there's things you gain and there's things that you lose. And it's a bit of a balancing act. And then you've got the whole phenomenon of people who are working at home with young children running around and, you know, sitting in their cars to get some space to actually do work. And that's a whole other collection of, you know, challenges that go along with this, with trying to find a place to think.
Yeah.
In houses that, you know, normally everyone would be out, but now everyone's not. So I think creatively needing that space and finding it is a challenge at times.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're not a creative and you've never worked in the creative world, the way everything you know about creative is kind of based on pop culture, right? So you imagine creatives like you've seen them in Mad Men, you know, like sitting in the same room and pinging ideas of each other. And that's harder, right, to do right now, because there's some kind of serendipity that happens naturally. If you're, you know, if you're kind of in the same place with others, compared to kind of starting a Zoom call, it's very, you know, it's scheduled, and I guess, you know, creativity doesn't work on like a schedule like that. I imagine that's, you know, one of the challenges.
Yeah, and I think that the creativity loves a problem. I think that there's problems to be solved, and people who are in a position now where they're being asked to use whatever form of creativity that is to help solve or do their bit towards solving a problem bit. And I'm not saying it's all about solutions. It could be about communication. I think there are times like these that that brings out the best. In some individuals, in some people, but yeah, in the solitude, the kind of quiet times, it might be more challenging than in the past.
Yeah. So going back to your early start in your career, a question that I have for you is, you know, we've all had this seemingly insignificant events, or at least it seemed like that at that time, that actually went on and changed our lives. Did you have anything like that? What's your, you know, insignificant event?
Yeah, I think maybe mine's not as insignificant in hindsight. I think that I had been freelancing for some time for an agency, and this particular contract came to an end. And I had gone out from there to a number of other places to look for work. And it had taken me some months to do that. And it wasn't very, and that's probably why it's not as insignificant. It wasn't a very good time at all to be walking the streets, if you like, trying to find your next job, because it can be a bit like that. So I stopped doing that and I did something else. And while doing that something else, it wasn't like a deliberate thing, but being able to have a break from it, I think made me, once I went back into advertising, once there was a job and I went into that, I went into it with a different perspective. I went into it with more of a grateful attitude, I think, towards that, and therefore was, I think, able to think differently about it. I think that it wasn't about being any less ambitious or being, you know, any more, I don't know, humble or nice or respectful or whatever that was. I just think it gave me a different perspective on the whole idea of going back to the drawing board, that wasn't such a bad thing, that the rejection wasn't terrible. And it wasn't, you know, I was never one of the type of people to kind of, you know, seek the criticism, but it actually helped me to realize that, you know, having to start again wasn't the hardest part.
Yeah.
The hardest part was getting back in to it.
Right.
So I think it wasn't like a insignificant moment, but I think its significance grew really over time.
Yeah. So it kind of built you a bit.
Yeah, I think it did. I think looking back at that, when I talk about that time, I kind of realized, yeah, it was probably, you know, something that shaped how I responded, you know, from then on.
Yeah. So is there anything you wish you knew when you were just starting out in your career about advertising, about the business world, you know, any advice that you would give to yourself back then?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that I look back on that. I think networking, I don't think that networking, being connected, like seeking that out, understanding the benefit of having a coffee with someone is really something that is taught to creatives, if you like. I think it's more creative people in agencies or in businesses tend to be a little bit more individual, or will be in a team and they'll stay in that team, or maybe the ambition level means they don't necessarily spread out and connect as such. And I think that whole idea of networking, and it's not really like something that's taught at, you know, business schools probably, but, you know, any kind of creative business schools, it's not really something. So I wish that I had been better at that. And then the other thing, to your point, I think creatives aren't really encouraged to understand the business, to understand how the business makes money, to understand where, you know, what it actually means to balance a P&L. And not that I think that they necessarily need to, but in shaping and growing a team and kind of getting enough people around you, understanding what things cost can really help you structure a debate or, you know, an argument around why you could invest in people in the creative area. And I think they were just kind of like two places that, I think that may have changed now. There might be more focus on that. But those type of skills of networking and understanding how the business works seems to have been more the reserves of, you know, different parts of the business and not necessarily creatives.
So the skills part actually takes me to my next question. You mentioned, you know, networking and understanding the business side as a few key skills that you wish, you know, you had developed earlier. What about now? What skills do you think you're missing right now? Or what skills are you struggling to develop right now? You know, we're never too perfect. So I guess what's, you know, the thing that you're working on right now for yourself?
I think that the, and I don't know if this is like a way that agencies operate as opposed to the way that corporate organizations operate. Things are more automated. I think there's more more open-mindedness towards letting different programs solve workflow problems than I think in the past I would have been open to. I would have more been about walking up to someone and asking, what are you working on? Which I would still do. And you know, always wanting to kind of feel like that was the way things needed to happen, to kind of have that physical kind of conversational thing of understanding, oh, you're doing that, that will take you this amount of time. When now I think I'm realizing that when there's so much work, when there's so many different executions, when there's so much to a campaign, the need to have a better understanding of how that's automated in order to help free up time, I think is something that wouldn't have come naturally to me, or doesn't come naturally to me, that I am more determined to, you know, at least try and understand how that would help.
Yeah, I love your answer. I love the honesty of it. but also it's such a great point that you're making. So as a creative, I imagine you're following a lot, and you know, you've also judged on major awards shows, and you've won awards, and I imagine you're very connected to the world, and you're following, you know, what brands are making and producing all around the world. So I'm curious if you have any companies or brands that you think are doing really great creative marketing nowadays?
Yeah, look, I think that there are a number of brands that pop up and do surprising things. And there are a number of brands that I think are finding their voice. At the moment, there's always a couple of go-tos, and I think that, you know, people have been talking about Apple for a number of years, but I particularly like in the last, I don't know how long it is, let's say 5, 6, 7 years, some of the work, and I won't even talk about Apple stores, you know, I won't even talk about the retail experience because that is next level as well, but just how product focused and how well executed so much of the work actually is from, you know, spots like Underdog, you know, the Underdogs that talk about the circular pizza, that talk, show you all the products in a storytelling way that's kind of right in there to the work of like Behind the Mac, you know, or even to kind of like the animated work or the bounce spot for, you know, the ear pods, the, you know, all of that work is kind of like so disciplined and linked and product focused to the brand and, you know, clearly invested in. There's not really, you know, the conversations which must go on about production value and what the brand actually is and what it stands for and how it's portrayed. And of course, you know, it's in a very fortunate position because it's technology and at the same time it's cool and it's music and it's film and it's all these kind of things.
Right.
But to continually do that, I think is, you know, a piece of marketing that you look back on. You can look back to the 80s, right? That story just keeps on being told. And then there's, you know, the other side of that, you know, conversation, which is Burger King and
yeah, you know, very different brands.
Yeah. And you look at that work, you know, that ranges from, you know, Moldy Whopper to what's recently being done, you know, to go back to Subservient Chicken, you know, there's a brand that kind of knows its enemy is, you know, a clown and will just go with that. And we'll know that, you know, when it wants to talk about its whatever superpower of flame grilling, it will actually show you shots of its restaurant burned down. So it's bravery, you know, and it understands its audience and understands its product and its place in the world. You know, I think it understands that it's a restaurant that sells hamburgers and it's going to have a lot of fun and make a lot of noise and challenge everyone, you know, on the way to the next Whopper. So I think those, you know, those two for me, you know, and I was only the other day talking about American Express because I think that, you know, in understanding communities or understanding your role in communities, be they small business or be they big spenders or be they entry-level credit cards, whatever it actually is, Amex seems to have this marketing program and plan that fits, you know, wherever it needs to fit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like not as rock and roll as the other two examples, but, you know, just as far as articulating its values at different levels, from business to kind of small business, they do a good job in my mind.
I really loved how you analyze them. You can see that you were part of analyzing campaigns at award shows. You can see that from the language you use and the way you think about them. So my last question before we move to wrapping up this conversation with our rapid fire session. But my last question before that is, you know, it's a very controversial question that I love asking my guests, and I always get really juicy answers on that. So my question is, you know, what's like one belief or buzzword that's trending today in the creative or advertising world that is really annoying you or that you disagree with?
Well, does influencer count?
Yes, it does. Why?
Yeah, I just think that the influencer culture, albeit necessary because of the various platforms that we all exist on, the need for there to be leaders, I guess, in whatever it is that we're looking at, I just think it's it lacks imagination, the use of them sometimes, and the individuals themselves I just don't know how we can put a large amount of trust and budget into the fact of posting something and that spike of views equating to anything that will be mirrored in sales. So I find kind of like from travel influencers to beauty influencers to they can tend to be quite boring people who just happen to have some good photography and some brands that get behind them that give them enough product, that buy them enough views. I just, from a creative channel, I just don't think that, I don't know. How did you ask me this question? Is there anything that annoys me or bugs me about marketing and advertising? I just think the over-reliance on influencer culture and where that might take us. I'd always, you know, back ideas. Or something that makes you feel something. I would hate to think that what influencers make you feel is inadequate. And we want to buy into being more like them because I don't actually like so much what I'm like in comparison to them. There's always been peers. Of course, we've always had peers and there's always been people to look up to. I'm just unsure whether they're, I think they're over-invested in.
Yeah. And that's not the first time I'm getting this answer on the podcast. So there seems to be a lot of, you're not the only one thinking that, I guess. Right. So let's wrap this up with our rapid fire session. So, you know, fast questions, quick answers. And my first one is, if you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, what else would you do?
I would quite like to be a breakfast talk show host. On a radio
breakfast station. Talk show host. That's such a unique answer. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Okay, good. What's your favorite app or tool that you use at work?
I don't really have one. I'm sorry.
The notebook and the pen.
Yes. That's what it might be. Like I said earlier, I'm trying to push myself to be more, you know, Slack, more Monday, more whatever it's going to actually help. But at the moment, I think I'm still a to-do list.
Yeah, well, stick with what works. Worst advice you've ever received?
A recruiter told me that it would be a 3-year hole or a 2-year hole in my book. Which I think was to allude to the fact that when you go to certain places, you don't get the work that you need from those places, and you come back and you're looking for a job and people look at your book or what you've done and it's not quite there. And I'm glad I didn't take that advice because it wasn't that for me. And I don't think it's really that way for most people that I know. I think the opportunities are really anywhere that you go looking for them. You just might have to work a little bit harder in a foreign country that has different culture and different language, of course. But I'm glad I didn't listen to that advice. I'm glad I didn't go there thinking that it was going to be that, because it certainly wasn't.
Yeah, that's such a great answer. And I love how everyone on the show just instantly has an answer. It's like everyone memorizes very well bad advices.
Bad advice, yes.
It just sticks with you.
Yes.
This was such an amazing conversation, Michael. Thank you so much for
Thank you for asking me, to be having me on. Thanks very much. Enjoyed it.
Great. And for everyone else, you know, listening in, thank you guys for joining. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And don't forget, we have new episodes every Wednesday. Subscribe to People of Marketing on your favorite podcast app and keep rocking.